Well, welcome back. You have another hour of me, although I think that I should be able to finish early. If my demos go well, we'll finish early, and if my demos crash, we'll finish really early. So I want to be respectful of your weekends, and I really appreciate you guys taking a day out of your busy schedule to come learn about Visual Studio. So I promised I would show you the platform support that we have for some of the test automation. And so some of the ability to fast forward through your manual tests. So remember, going back to our manual tests we recorded, we fast forwarded through some of those steps. Our ability to do that is dependent on the type of application that you're testing. And so you can see up here, I'm not going to read the slide to you. This is also available in the documentation. I'll make this available in my slides as well via my blog. But I just wanted to make this available to you. In the future, we will, of course, be growing this and adding additional options so that in the future, we'll be able to test Silverlight applications and hopefully other third-party testing frameworks, development frameworks as well. So that's the automation capability. Now, a lot of what I showed you as well is not dependent on this. So the ability to author and run manual test cases and capture video recordings, capture system information, event logs, a lot of this information and a lot of the value in what we're delivering around manual testing does not depend on this. So even if you're testing, for example, a Java application, and we don't support that today, I hope that you'll still see a lot of value and consider using our tools to do those types of test executions. So there are really two things that I want to show you in the rest of this presentation, and that would be the coded UI test. So we're going to take that manual test that we created during the first session, and we're going to turn that into a fully automated coded UI test, which can be run automatically as part of your build. And then after that, we're going to explore lab management and show you how you can set up a full build, deploy, test scenario where you can automatically take your latest builds, push that out to a virtual environment or even multiple virtual environments that might have different configurations. Like I need to test, the German version of Windows Server and the English version. So let's set up different environments for that. And then finally, we're going to show how those automated tests can then automatically be run against that virtual environment. So as a tester, you get in the morning, you take a look at the test results, and you see, hey, we had this automated test that failed, so we have a regression we need to go investigate. And so I'll spend the rest of the time talking about that. So to start with, let's take this manual test that I have here, and let's fully automate this test. So this is a slightly different test than the one I ran in the first scenario, just because it's a little bit more simple to focus on the basics. The idea here is that we want to make sure that our shopping cart quantity is robust, meaning that if someone comes into the shopping cart for our application and they type -5, we don't want to actually pay them to place an order through our store. That would be bad. That would be a bad bug. So we are going to test for that. So we have the simple test case here where we're adding some items to our cart. We're adjusting the quantity. We're getting the new value for the quantity from this table down here. We want to make sure that the letters A, the number 0, and -5 doesn't actually impact the shopping cart quantity. So it should revert back to the original quantity, which for this test case is 1. So pretty straightforward. And so now the point in the development lifecycle we're at is that the test team has spent time testing this, and they feel pretty confident that this test is passing on a regular basis. They've recorded an action recording by going through the same steps we went through earlier, and now they want to turn this into a fully automated test. So the idea is that the UI has mostly stabilized. If we invest in test automation at this point, we're not going to break our test later on when we change, the layout for the shopping cart or something like that. And so we've identified this as one test case that we want to automate. And so I'll drop back into Visual Studio, and I'll create a new test project. And so I would create this test project the same way that I would create a test project for creating unit tests or for creating web tests or load tests. In fact, you can see here that I'm even getting the default test case or the default test that appears is a unit test. And if you're familiar with writing unit tests in Visual Studio today, then you'll actually be very comfortable writing coded UI tests with Visual Studio 2010 because we actually follow the same testing framework for creating coded UI tests that you do when you create unit tests. So let's add a new coded UI test. Visual Studio now asks me how I want to generate this coded UI test. I have two options. The first option is I can just open up my application, I'll turn on the recorder, I'll start interacting with my application the way that I would expect the user to, or at least the way that I need to follow a particular test scenario. And while we're doing that, we're capturing all of those actions in the background. Once we're finished, we convert that into code, and then that becomes my test case, which I can run in an automated fashion. But I'm going to take advantage of the fact that the test team has actually already gone through this this behavior of recording an action recording and associating it with that test case, so I can start with their hard work and import that into my test case. So let's do that here. We'll use an existing action recording. This is test case number 41, so I'll just go to that directly. So this is connecting back to Team Foundation Server, where that test case is stored as a work item. There's my test case. We'll say OK. And now what this does is it takes the action recording and it converts that into code. So if we zoom in a little bit here, if we go back and examine the original test case, you can see it had several test steps. The first one was to open this website, then go to model airplanes, fourth coffee flyer, and so on. And then if we look here, we're opening up the website, we're clicking on model airplanes, we're going to fourth coffee flyer. So this actually illustrates another reason why it's important that when you're recording the action recordings, if you intend to either play back partial numbers of steps from there, or if you want to later convert that to a coded UI test, a good best practice to follow is to make sure that when you're recording those action recordings, you're associating them back with the individual test steps on a pass-fail basis as you move through them. If we look at what's happening behind the scenes within this method, if I go to definition, you can see the code where we're actually opening up that website. So here you can see we're opening up a new URL, so we're launching Internet Explorer by default, and we're passing in that particular website URL. And some of this you may not care about, but I'll just show you where this parameter is actually picked up from, because that's important if you want to override it. The gentleman in the back asked earlier, what if I have a different website that I want to go to than the one that I went to when I was recording the test? And that's a great question, because what if I want to run this automated test instead of on my development server, I now want to run it on the test server, on the production server. That's when you would want to parameterize the test and override the original values. And so here, this particular variable, this string, is where we store the URL for the website. And if you wanted to override that, you could do it a number of different ways. I could just change it within the coded UI test. I might want to read it from a resource file. So maybe when I deploy this out to a test machine in the lab, maybe I want to have it just run the host name and override this variable with the host name of the computer because I'm hitting the local machine. Any number of ways to approach this. Another thing you can do is you can also data bind your test case in the coded UI test in the same way that you would data bind a unit test today. So if you've data bound unit tests before, you're probably already familiar with this notation. So you can see data source, and then up here, this is actually connecting back to the original test case. So meaning that we're pulling in the test parameters here from this particular column of data. There's the address to my Team Foundation server. There's the work item number, and we're using a sequential data access method. Likewise, if you wanted to bind this, for example, to a database or to an XML file, you could do that the same way you would bind a unit test. So if we look at test view here, wrong window. Oh, not right window. I just need to read the instructions and click refresh once in a while. Okay, so coded UI test. And then if we come to the data connection string and click on the ellipsis here, then we could point that to a CSV file or a database, and that would change the logic so that instead of going through the test case, we would actually be pulling those values from an XML file or a database. And there's a nice wizard you can follow. I won't take you through that right now. So by default, you know, this knows that it needs to take that data in from my test case. And then down here, this is the line where we're actually calling up that particular value from that column. So that's the new quantity column. And we're overwriting the existing value that exists within that code behind file. So this is great. I have, you know, a test case now that can run automatically, and it can click through and drive the application and change the quantity. But what we haven't done is we haven't actually replaced the brain of the tester sitting behind the machine who looks and makes sure that the shopping cart still behaves correctly, that when I type -5, it's not actually changing that so that we're paying the customer to take items from us. Instead, what I need to do now is I need to add some assertion logic. And so what we're going to do is we're automatically going to inspect the form after we've manipulated it to make sure that it still resembles the state of the application that we want. And the way that I'll do that is I'll come into the step within the application. I know, go away. We'll come into the step within the application where the tester would normally be validating the application. And I'll click on test and generate code, use the coded UI test builder. And now what I can do is I can open up my application and put it into the state that it will have the control that I wish to validate. So in this example, I have model airplanes, fourth copy flyer, add to cart. And at this point, we need to make sure that after I type in, for example, -5 and refresh that, that it reverts back to one. And so what I can do is I can take this chooser down here, drag and drop it onto the control. And so now that selects that text box. Another thing just to point out with this chooser is that we have this D-pad over here that can allow you to go up and down and left and right through the control hierarchy. So if you find that you need to validate, for example, a panel that may not be visible, it might be hard to click on within your application. Instead, just choose like a text box that's within there or some other control and then go up within the hierarchy, and then that would select the control that you're looking for. So this is a list of all the properties that exist on that particular control. And so we want to validate the text, and so we'll just add that assertion. And we want to confirm that the text is equal to number one here. We'll say, okay, if I wanted to, I could also add, you know, other controls or other properties out of this property bag that I want to validate. So is it visible? Is the text, you know, black? You know, any number of things that we might want to validate. I'll just add this single validation for now. We'll say generate code. It asks me what I want to call the method. Make sure quantity is still one. Not very creative. Add and generate. Now let me just reset the state of my application. Close out of that. Close out of the coded UI test builder. And now what that did is it added this additional method. So if I take a look at that method, go to definition. It's just a basic assertion. So here we are asserting that the control that we're validating is equal to the value that we're specifying there. So make sure that the text box is equal to 1. So at this point, if I've done everything correctly, then I should be able to run this test. So I'll just say right-click, run test. And so this should automatically fire off Internet Explorer. And we're going to test this 3 different times. So it's going to run the test once for each row of data that's in here. And remember, this is something that you could wire up to your automated build. So you can make sure that, you know, this runs overnight and you get in the morning. And if you have a failure, then that shows up as part of your list of failed tests. And so if we look at this, for example, you can see here's where we ran that test 3 different times and it passed each one of those times. We can also simulate what that looks like if it fails. So if I come down into quantity, I'm kind of going to fake it here. So let's say that we change the quantity to a +5. In reality, that is actually going to set the shopping cart to 5. And so it's no longer going to be equal to 1. So you kind of have to suspend disbelief here and pretend that I'm actually breaking the test. But if we come back to test and run that again, then you'll see what it looks like if a test iteration actually fails. Yeah, question? Yeah, so that's a great question. So the question is, you know, mini screens might be dynamic. You might have, you know, different numbers of rows of data on here. There might be a lot of different variables that could affect the playback of your test. And that's a fair point. Actually, before I answer that, we'll just show you here. Assert failed. We expected it to be equal to 1, and it was actually equal to 5. So there, I can quickly get that in the list of test results, and then that gives my testers some great information that they can use to go make sure that these are actually valid bugs, and then we can file those back to the developers. Or you can even have this automatically create a bug when the test fails. So how do we deal with that? How do we deal with making your tests a little bit more robust? There's not a short answer to your question, because the answer is that it depends. It depends on what's changing about the application. It depends on what you might change as a developer, or exactly how dynamic your application might be, and what we can key on. It also depends on the application framework. So what may be really easy for us to detect when you're changing a web application might be a little bit trickier when you're changing a WPF application, for example. But I will say that we try to make these as robust as possible. And even though this is the first time that we're shipping this technology, it's built on technology that's been in use at Microsoft for many, many years to test applications like SQL Server and Windows and even Visual Studio. So if we take a look, for example, at what's a good example? Let's dig in through this code and see what we can find. What I'm looking for are some of the fallback parameters that we use when we identify a text box, for example. So let's do that. Let's change the text box. So we're actually changing the quantity within this particular method. And so this is where we define the control that we're looking for. And if we go to definition for that control, I think maybe it's here. Bear with me here. This is what happens when you write a demo on the fly. But I do want to address your question, because basically what I'm looking for is I'm looking for the set of fallback parameters that we use. Here's a good example. So search criteria. So here's where we've captured a lot of the search criteria for this particular control. So what you can see here is that we have a number of different ways of finding this control. So in the example that you changed for the name of the control, we might be able to still find that control because we know that it's a child of this other particular control, like the child control within a panel or something along those lines. Or you change the direction or the location of a control. Whenever we can actually use other information to try and find that particular control, we're going to try that out and see if the test case still passes. If it does, great. If not, then eventually we'll time out. We won't be able to find the control. You can change the timeout value if you want as well. And then we'll kick that back and we'll say, hey, look, your test failed. It could be because the test legitimately failed, or it could be because your test no longer works because of some underlying change, or like you mentioned, some dynamic behavior within your application that's causing it to break. So that is going to be left up to you to go ahead and investigate, but whenever possible, we try our best to try and make the test robust, because we understand that you're not going to freeze your application just so you can test it. Your application is always going to be changed. Great question. Anybody else, actually? Yeah, so can you make the search criteria dynamic? Yes, you can, in respect that you can override any of these values. It's just code. So if, for example, you are searching for a control based on, I don't know, model airplanes, and I don't know how you say model airplanes in another language, but let's say that you have this resource file, then what you could do is you could override all those individual parameters for a particular iteration, or maybe when you deploy it to a different machine, you want to read from a resource file. So rather than have this string embedded within your code, you have that string be dynamic in order to adapt to the underlying language of the application that you're testing. So yeah, great question. So the question is, what about if you want to use InUnit to generate these types of tests, or some other testing framework? The UI that we generate is going to be based on the Visual Studio unit tests that are in here. If you wanted to use InUnit or XUnit, you could call into our object model, and you could have it go through and drive the application, and then add assertion logic as well. You're kind of going to be on your own, though. It would be the analogy would be like if you were using the Windows Forms Designer to generate all of this code behind for an application you're putting together, and then you wanted to go kind of build that from scratch. Not something I necessarily recommend, because the designers do a lot of the work for you to put in all of this information. Now, what you might be able to do instead, though, is you might be able to take what's currently generated from the Visual Studio unit tests, generate that once and then take that information and change the method calls and the method signatures to match that of your in-unit testing framework or X-unit, because at the end of the day, they're very similar. So I would say that would be the approach that I would take rather than trying to generate everything from scratch, although you could follow both models. Anybody else? I really can't see hands, so just shout out like you guys have been doing if you have anything. Okay. So if anything else comes up with respect to coded UI tests, let's definitely talk about it. But what I'll do now is I'll switch over and I'll start talking about lab management. This is my favorite topic, by the way. Lab management really brings it all together. So lab management addresses several problems. Lab management, first of all, addresses the challenge of getting your application deployed into a test environment. So what you can do with lab management is you can generate a build. You know, once again, maybe you want to build it every night. And then you can spin up a set of virtual environments. So maybe I need to test my software on Windows Server 2008 and Windows Server 2003 and Windows Vista. So we're going to spin up each one of those virtual environments. A virtual environment can consist of one or more machines. So I might have a database server and a web server. And then we can, once we compile your solution, we can automate the deployment of the application into those environments. So that could be running a batch file you specify, it could be running an installer that you build, it could be running an MS deploy package and pushing that out to the web server. However you deploy your applications today, you can then automate that as part of the workflow here. Once we push that out to your virtual environment, we can then snapshot the virtual environment. And so we take advantage of the Hyper-V snapshotting capability to create that snapshot, and that gives you a point in time that you can always refer back to. So I want to see, you know, last Tuesday's build. So I go to my lab management machine, and I fire up the snapshot that corresponds to a virtual environment that has last Tuesday's build. After we've snapshotted, then we can start running your automated tests as well. So we have a workflow that allows you to push all of your automated tests out to those machines, and you might run unit tests, you might run the coded UI test that we described up here. Any sort of automated tests you might want to run can be run on those virtual environments, and those results can automatically show up against your test plan that you created in Microsoft Test Manager, so that as a tester, when I get in the morning and I have, you know, 200 tests, but 100 of them are automated tests, I can see at a glance which tests ran overnight and whether or not they passed or failed. And then finally, as a manual tester, I have those virtual environments available to me so I can connect to them and run the other 100 tests that I need to run for that day. Let's say I find a bug. If I find a bug, I showed you earlier how you can take all the information such as the IntelliTrace file, the event viewer, the action recordings, the video, all that information can be packaged up with a bug. But what you can also do is you can take a snapshot of the virtual environment as well. So you snapshot that environment. I go back to Martin. I said, hey, I found a bug in your code. And he not only has this rich, actionable data to act on, but he can also connect back to that virtual environment on demand. So he doesn't have to tell me, well, wait, stop your test run. I need to get over there and, you know, see what's going on before you do anything else. And then I'm blocked and I have to go on a four-hour lunch waiting for him to diagnose my machine. I can keep doing my work on my own copy of the environment. And then once he's ready to, he can open up that snapshot and he can say, let me see exactly what's going on. Okay? So those are some of the different problems that we're trying to solve. You can, of course, roll your own solution with virtualization today, but I wouldn't recommend it. There's a lot of steps that need to happen in order to do that. And so what we've done with 2010 is we've enabled this environment where you can wire up Team Foundation Server with a lab management capability to talk directly to System Center Virtual Machine Manager. I'm not going to get into all the under-the-cover mechanics of how you set that up, but basically the idea with that is that SCVMM can farm out one or more virtual machines out to virtual machine hosts, and so you can start by storing your individual VMs into a VM library. And so when you get ready to spin up a Windows Server 2008 machine, you can say, okay, give me two different Windows Server 2008 machines. Here's the machine name. Here's the product key. Here's the IP address. Here's the domain name you should connect to. It spins that up. And then once we spun that up from the library to a host, then we can start taking advantage of that whole build, deploy, test workflow that we mentioned earlier. So let's see this working. So this, I promise, will be a spectacular demo. It will either be really, really cool, or it will crash spectacularly. One or the other. I promise we are going to see that running today. So the reason it might crash isn't the fault of the product, but it basically is because I'm a walking data center and I've got, you know, multiple hard drives, and I'm running what you would usually run on multiple server machines on my poor little laptop up here. So if it crashes, don't blame the product, just blame my laptop and me. So I mentioned earlier how we have this other view within Microsoft Test Manager that allows us to take a look at Lab Center. So that's what we're going to be doing today. What you can see here is I have a deployed virtual environment which is currently running on my virtual machine host. So once again, it's my physical machine, but this might be another machine, another physical machine, or multiple physical machines even running the same virtual environment. And this is a representation of the individual systems that are in there. So I have a database server in that environment, and I have a web server in that environment. And this is currently powered down. For those of you that are familiar with Hyper-V, you'll notice that that actually shows up as an image that's running on my Hyper-V machine. But as a tester, you don't actually have to concern yourself with the Hyper-V mechanics. You don't even have to concern yourself with the System Center Virtual Machine Manager mechanics. We act as a layer on top of that just to expose what you care about within Microsoft Test Manager. So going back to our environment here, what I want to do now is I want to make a change to my code. I want to generate a new build. I want to push it out to this environment, and then I want to run my automated test to make sure I didn't break anything. So if we come to Build Explorer, this is where we set up a new build. And in order to show you that this is real, we're going to make some changes here. We're going to push out those changes. So let's see, I'm going to change careers. Remember, these are the links at the bottom of the page. I'm going to change careers to, Sarah, what's your favorite vacation destination? Something I can spell, not something. France, I can spell that. Awesome. And let's see. Yeah. Actually, the last time someone said Florida, and I actually grew up in Florida. Let's see, who's married? No one's married? Come on, you guys are married. I'm not going to pick on you again. What's your wife's name? Oh, something I can spell. No, I'm kidding. You? Oh, sorry. You're good. How do you spell your wife's name? Okay, fantastic. And I can't put your wife's name in here and not put my own girlfriend's name in there, so I'm going to do that. And then we're going to go ahead and check this file in. And let's see, vacation and wives and girlfriends. I hope no one else is working on this development team because they're going to get really confused. Okay. So we checked that change in, and now we want to go ahead and build that change. So this takes a little while to kick off, so I'm going to go ahead and do a couple things here. You'll see why I'm doing this in a moment. So this is going to allow us to monitor the build as it's being pushed out. Basically, when I connect to the environment, it opens up this, you can think of it as remote desktop connection back to the environment. So here we have our web server and our database server. And of course, those are powered off right now, so there's not much to look at. I'm going to go ahead and kick off the build because it does take a little while to run. And while it's running, I'll tell you what we're doing here. So if I edit this build definition, you can see the workflow that I've set up here. We just have a basic title and a description here. So for this particular build environment, I'm going to be pushing it out to a Windows Server-based environment. So I've described that here. I'm running Windows Server 2008, SQL Server 2008 with SP1. You know, anything I want to tell the rest of my team about this particular environment. If I wanted to push it out to Windows Server 2003 running SQL Server 2005, I might set up a different environment which does the same thing. So then if I come down to, I'm going to skip back past some of this stuff that's not interesting. Process is where things get interesting. So by default, when you create a new build definition within TFS 2010, we use what's called the default template. And so what I've done here is I've selected the lab default template. And so the lab default template has some special properties of it that basically allow me to launch this wizard and describe, first of all, which environment I want to use. So this is my virtual environment that I've created here. You can go ahead and take it. It's not a problem. And then we also have a snapshot machine name that we can refer back to. And so the idea is that before we push our bits onto the machine, we want to go back to an earlier snapshot which doesn't have anything installed. Maybe it already has the prerequisites like SQL Server and SP1, but we want to make sure that we restore back to a clean state. And so if you take a look at my virtual environment over here, You can see that I have a number of snapshots I can refer back to. There's my clean state. This is a little bit like, well, it's very similar to a snapshot within Hyper-V, only this snapshot actually contains the entire environment. And so we're snapshotting both machines at the same time, or you know, all 10 machines if you have 10 machines in your environment. Then we have, what else? Next we have build. So what we're doing here is we're actually kicking off another team build definition to compile my project prior to taking that compilation output and pushing it down to my virtual environment. This is where things get interesting. This is the deployment tab. And deployment allows you to specify scripts that you want to run on each individual virtual machine. So these will execute in order. So the first thing that we're doing is we're running this dbdeploy.batch file. That's just a batch file that I've written. All it does is it goes out and runs the database deployment engine that we ship with Visual Studio to take the database that's part of my project and push it out to the database running on the data tier within my virtual environment. Then the next thing we're doing is we're running this deploy for the web script as well. So that's an MS deploy. I'm not going to get into the specifics, but basically this takes the web application and it pushes it out to the web server that's within my environment. Once we're done with that, we'll then take another snapshot. So if I want to see the results of Tuesday night's build, I can go back to that particular snapshot prior to any test being executed. And then finally, we run the tests. So we take the test plan that I've created within Microsoft Test Manager, and we're going to run the individual tests within that plan that have associated automation. So the manual test we took earlier, we converted that into an automated test, and we're going to run that automatically. So let's see if everything's working. So here what we've done is, if I look at my build script, actually, we can see exactly where we're at. So here's the new build process. Right now, it's currently on a step that says waiting for workflow capability to be ready. So there are multiple agents which you can install within these virtual environments. One such agent is the test agent. That's responsible for running tests. It's also responsible for collecting all that data we talked about earlier, such as the event log, system information. And then all that information gets fed back into a test collector, and then that gets pushed out to Team Foundation server. If it sounds a little bit messy right now, it does take a while to wrap your head around, but once you get it, it's actually a pretty clean architecture. The other agent that's currently spinning up right now is the build agent. And the build agent is responsible for participating in build workflows, including the execution of any deployment scripts that you have as well. So this one does take a little bit while to come up, and once it does, then we'll be able to watch it push my application, deploy my application to each one of these machines. Takes a few minutes. Just remember that this is something that that normally you would run overnight, and so you know, you'd run it on better hardware than what I have here. Oh gosh, this happens sometimes. Let's try to repair that. This only happens when I'm on stage, by the way. It worked fine earlier today. It does work on my machine. You guys are good. Nice. Yeah, the problem that I hit sometimes with this workflow agent is that I've got multiple virtual machines. You may have noticed throughout the day that I've got, for this particular demo, I have my domain controller, I have my lab management VM, I have multiple VMs that are part of my running virtual environment. And so unless those all start up in the right order after I shut down and go from my hotel and come and set up here, unless those all start up in the right order and handshake correctly, then it can sometimes result in this problem. So I don't know if we'll get it to respond. We'll see if it'll come back. No, it doesn't look like it's going to come back, but I can show you the rest of this. Basically, the idea here is that it would then deploy everything out to this environment, and we'd see that show up in the script. I'm just going to stop this build because I'm going to revert back to another environment that I already set this up on, and you'll see me fill in the blanks here for the rest of what would happen. Or if you stick around until after my talk, I'm sure it would work then. Okay, I think I deployed this earlier today. So today is the 9th, and so I can restore my virtual environment back to that state from the 9th. And just to show you what's going on there, if we take a look, it went ahead and saved the existing state, and then it's going to roll back that state within Hyper-V. Once again, that's all stuff that happens behind the scenes. You don't even, as a tester, I don't even need to be aware of that. We do support Hyper-V today. SCVMM itself actually supports Hyper-V and VMware, but we haven't yet done the work to enable lab management to support VMware. That is something that we're working on. We expect that that will ship in advance of the next release of Visual Studio, so you won't need to wait until Visual Studio 2013 or whatever the next release is. That's something we're trying to enable in advance so that you can continue to work with VMware if that's your virtualization platform of choice. So this is almost back up. And once this comes up, what we'll do is we'll go ahead and complete this by running our test automatically, which is really the next step. So after we deployed everything, it would then run the test automatically and then report the results back to your test plan. So almost there. Okay, so we're now at the point within my virtual environment where I deployed earlier. So we can verify that here. Sure enough, there's my application. Unfortunately, we don't have your wife's name or your vacation name in there because we weren't able to get that other deployment working, but I'm sure they'll understand. And so what we can do is we can come back to the Microsoft Test Manager, and we can pick that test. So here's my test. If I now want to run that test, I can come to the Test tab, and I can say, let's go ahead and run that with options. And so I'm going to select the build that I'm running against, which is that .1 build. And I could, at this point, run all those tests manually. Like maybe my automated test failed because there was a change in my application which caused the automated test to break, like what you were talking about earlier, and I just need to go back and run that test manually to differentiate between a actual bug in my application and something that just caused the automated test to break. So I have that option to run that test manually here if I want to. But I'm just going to run this test automatically so you can see the magic of the test agents and everything talking back to the controller. So now if I run this test manually or automatically, over in the lower right-hand corner here, you're going to see this actually push the test case down to that virtual environment. Actually, it looks like it went too fast. It's automatically running all my test cases on my individual virtual environment. Now you can see test progress 0 of 1 completed. So now it should run this a second time. Or maybe I only had one iteration in there. Okay, yeah, I must have only had one iteration in this particular version of the test case. But there you can see that it automatically ran that test case, it reported back to the test controller, and now if I come back to my test results within Microsoft Test Manager, you can see that this passed. So that easily could have been part of my build, deploy, test workflow. I get in the morning, those tests already ran. Maybe they failed. Maybe I have a video recording that's already attached for me to look at and see exactly what's going on. But you can see how Microsoft Test Manager automatically interacts with that. So that's lab management. And I think, actually, that's everything that I wanted to cover today. So you guys have been a great audience. Please take the time to fill out the evaluation forms. If you liked what you saw and you give me good ratings, I might be able to come back. If you didn't like what you see, don't bother to fill out those evaluation forms. No one looks at them anyway. And with that, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Martin, who's going to wrap up with some closing thoughts. So thank you very much.